All right, let's roll. You ready, Shane?
I'm ready.
Finish taking calls?
I'm done.
Beautiful. Welcome to The Crunch. We're back, episode, don't know, didn't check, 84 potentially. We have got Shane back, fresh off his appearance on the Yellow Brick Road Property Insights Nationwide podcast.
Very good. Very enjoyable.
Good.
Very fast, very quick.
Excellent.
Back, but it was very enjoyable.
That's what we like to hear. And we have Peter Zambody in the room today as well, in the Crunch Room, back in the hot seat, second appearance on the show. Welcome, Pete.
Me back.
From Mont Property. Couple of things we want to talk about today. You guys sell into very, very different markets. Shane, obviously your core area is kind of Gosnells, which is, what's your average price there, between four and?
About 420.
420?
Yeah.
Pete, you're selling Applecross area. Your average price point would be 800 plus, is that correct?
Yeah, 8 to 1.2.
Yep, perfect. So very different markets. What would you say, do you guys want to just give me a quick breakdown on what's happening in each of those so that we can kind of compare the two? Because Shane, I know you're talking a lot about Eastern States buyers, particularly at the moment. Pete, you're not seeing any of that. So
So I guess a lot of the Eastern States buyers, despite the media talking down the market, and you got to remember over there, they're probably talking it down a lot more than what we're seeing because their market is, well, I just saw a stat the other day that the first home buyer applications are down 51%. On 12 months prior. So that's a big change compared to here where everything's moving really well at that entry-level stock. So investors are seeing great opportunity here. The yields are not slowing down. We were averaging around about 60, 65% of inquiry from Eastern States. Local investors are still not really back in the market yet. And I'm not going to say negative equity, but a lot of it is because they're only just getting back to what they've actually paid for their property. So we're just seeing them pop up a bit. But the Eastern States guys, because they've their properties in many circumstances have doubled since 2014. They've got that equity. And a lot of them are regular mum and dads looking to invest, seeing what's happened on the Eastern Seaboard. That's really busy. First home buyers are certainly back. They are competing with the investors, as I mentioned. The tick up from that, I get to sell all ends of the market to a degree. I've seen that flow on to the 700 and 700 plus, purely for the fact that they're typically coming from the 400 to 450 range maybe, or even the 320 range, and they're getting a bigger home, moving from villa to a house. You know, a good example is we spoke to someone the other day, just sold in Gosnells their villa, and they moved to Auburn Grove. So they got a great price for the villa, which meant they could go to Auburn Grove, and they were competing with many people. So that end of the market, I think, is moving really well. I can't see it slowing down. Buyer sentiment has not changed at all. But probably the biggest thing we're just starting to notice now with the interest rate rising, they're not changing their intent to buy. It's just what they can probably get for their money's changing. So instead of maybe being, let's use in Pete's circumstance, they want to get an Applecross, they might have to look at Mount Pleasant. So Auburn Grove, they might have to go to Success and these sort of shifts, but they still have intent to buy.
Hey.
Yeah, well, ours is a very different market. We've got mostly people trading up, so we don't get a lot of investors. Very, very rarely we'll get an investor call because if you're going to pay, give it a $1 million, you're not going to rent it out. You're buying for the school zone for your family to enjoy, the lifestyle, the parks, the proximity to the river. So we're really selling a lifestyle versus an investment. So it's a really different
yield
space.
Don't be there.
Not at all. You'd put your money in a better yielding investment, but this is more of a lifestyle. So we don't, we're seeing a lot of people, we do see the odd person from overseas relocating back. We get a little bit of Eastern States, but they're from Perth, but no one's speculating on making money out of a transaction. It is more to do to live there, to enjoy the lifestyle on offer.
And are you seeing those buyers that are trading up, as Shane's just said, do they have, are they coming from the area and trading up?
Yeah, hyperlocal. They're within 5Ks, so they're moving from maybe Ardross to Applecross or from Melville into whatever that, but they're trading up, generally getting out of a strata or a smaller property into something with land. People are spending more time at home. People value their home a lot more now, so they're really emphasising, okay, we're going to put a bit more money into our house, get some of the pool, close to the parks. We're going to walk our kids to school now. You know, all those little lifestyle, you know, factors that people appreciate a lot more post-COVID have come into the search. So I think people are selling off their investments in area, consolidating to one house instead of having, you know, one house plus two investments.
And are you finding the interest rates are starting to have an effect on their budget?
A little bit. We're just starting to see the buyers negotiate a bit harder and bring up the interest rate, and that that is coming in. It's not as potent in our area because they've got a bit more buffer, but it is starting to creep because naturally their borrowing power has dropped 20-25% in a year. That does affect people, but we do have a lot of downsizers. So their downsizers have, you know, if you're selling quite a nice property and you're downsizing something small, you generally have a lot of equity and, you know, it's not so sensitive to an interest rate rise.
Okay, beautiful. All right, guys, we don't want to spend too much time on each of your markets because we have covered that a fair amount in the last couple of months. What I want to chat to both of you about, obviously one of the main conversations I'm hearing from agents at the moment is, yeah, we're going all right, but stock's pretty hard to come by. Cannot find stock, can't get a listing. And both of you are doing really well in that regard. You know, you're both very successful agents, had a great year last year and on track for another great year this year. So wanting to get some, have a conversation about what you're doing differently that's helping you kind of get those listings across the line. So how have you both created momentum? And I know this is a conversation that's over 10 years, it's not over two, but created momentum in your area to become the most active agents in your area?
It's a good question. I think when you first come into real estate, one, you want to take anything you can get, and you probably don't have the past experience to reflect on. So where my business is, I'm getting better. I'm enjoying work more because I'm dealing with people that I have rapport with. And how we've gone about that is actually just speaking to people that we know they're not looking at selling. They're probably not looking at buying, but they're in their past clients. So we try and, I guess, advise them on what we're seeing in the market so they're fully informed. The reason we're doing that is people's circumstances change all the time. In fact, an Eastern States person I spoke to last week, they only just bought 9 months ago. Rang them just to say, hey, guys, just sold one around the corner. Just want to let you know you're probably up about 50, 60 grand in less than 12 months. Shane, it's interesting you called. We've been getting all those things, letting us know what's happening. The interest rate rises over here. Whilst I know the investment property is doing well, it's probably having an impact in our life here because of our principal residence. We need to sell. That transit within 20 minutes, we've listed the property, ready to go to market. But if you don't keep in contact, don't advise them, there's a very good chance that when they do have those conversations, we're going back to market, you're going to be one of three. So we've really gone down the path of trying to communicate with people we already know. Through that, you're going to meet more clients because you've got the signs up and you've got that digital interview. But I've really gone down the path of trying to be the professional in giving the right advice for their scenario, as always trying to look for another appraisal, another listing. And naturally it will come back to you. So that's probably the biggest difference from the hunting of one of more free appraisal. Who charges for appraisals?
But everyone's got free appraisal. Do people do that?
No, but everyone's a free appraisal.
Oh, right.
So what I'm saying is no point of difference. To call someone today and give them advice on their scenario that they need it. And not expecting a return, that's where I've probably found the biggest difference. In a market like this, where there's such the mixed media, they're blown away when you actually say, look, your property's performing well, even though interest rates, they're quite shocked by that. So I think it's really important.
Pete, and if anyone wants to know Pete's background, because I'm sure everyone knows Shane's, but obviously we talked a lot about that in the last time you were on the podcast, and we can throw up which episode number that was. It was a couple of years ago now. So we've got that. We know where you came from, which was you're a really young agent in an area that, you know, was a high value area. So kind of scrambling to get the trust of people and make those moves. So what have you, and now in the last couple of years, you've been focusing on moving your core area up a little bit, correct?
Yeah.
So what have you kind of done to?
Really good question. So at the start of your career, you've got to take whatever you can to break in, cut your fees, you know, do what you have to get momentum. Once you've got momentum, I think it's about keeping it, but really comes down to now is helping people. We're spending half our time helping someone, as Shane alluding to, that they're buying, and say, look, pick up the phone, give us a call. We don't want the conjunction, but we'll help you buy that one. When you're ready, come back to us. But really helping, getting to them before they need an agent, so that you're not the one of three agents and you're doing the twirl and saying, oh, you know, what do you offer? What's your best feeds? They're choosing you before they've lined up their agent effectively before they need one. Unless something changes, you might get price checked, but what we're doing is really going out of our way to help people to say, you know, when you need us, we're here. We're the trusted opinion. We know what we're doing. We've stood the test of time, but just doing it well, helping people, and then creating that referral base. And I think when you get the referral base, you don't have to chase so hard, and momentum is a really good thing, like compounding interest. Yeah. It just flows and you get better stock, and you naturally don't have to take the stuff that you don't want to at the fees you don't want to, with the clients that aren't reasonable or going to listen. So it just naturally gets a little bit better, but the foundation of it is obviously hard work, but just being going out of your way to help people so that they've got someone that they can lean on through such an important and a stressful time. So I think it's really important to just be the friend in the game to help.
Yeah. I think through when I look at the best conversations I'm having with clients every day, I gauge my day on those conversations I'm having every single day more than how many listings or sales. Because the more I put into that pipeline where we're building that rapport and they call me about something that I'm not going to benefit from, but we give them the best advice because we're detached from the outcome, I think they really appreciate that. Not every industry is like that.
No, yeah, but you're trying to close the listing there and there. You know that if you give him really good help, he'll naturally come back to you when he's ready. And that's what a lot of people don't do. They want the listing now. They want everything now. But if you delay the gratification, you'll get a much better outcome down the track.
I think it's a marketing strategy that not enough businesses employ outside of this industry as well. And it's something that I know social media is. I know there's some non-fans in the room, but it's the same thing that I used to teach in social media is you're not there to make a listing at that time. You're not on social media to make a sale. You're on there to educate and create relationships and keep those ongoing. So when someone needs you, they make the call to you.
So I think, like personally, I think I'd spend on personal branding or marketing, I'd be in the bottom 10%. I reckon of the industry what I would spend. And I write a fair bit.
Pete's in the bottom 1%.
I'd be in the bottom 1%.
So I average about 1,500 a month in branding, and a lot of that's working on the people I've already got in the system. What I've gone to is investing into people in my team now to enhance the client experience, because there's no point going broke finding new business. But I've got all these great clients that I want them to have a great experience, whether it be now, 2 years, 5 years, 20 years time, that's where I've gone to as a different model as opposed to more bus stops. I don't do bus stops. I don't do pointer signs, those sorts of things.
Don't do bins.
Don't do bins. Bin selling.
It's the old adage, right? 80% of your business comes from 20% of your clients.
I think that's a lot of people, you just don't want to go broke finding new business. At first, like you said, you take on what you can get. But even if you're first starting out, start to have more impressive and better conversations with everyone you meet as opposed to just trying to close everything.
Yeah.
And they'll appreciate it.
Yeah.
It really will.
There's also that you're going from a you're more a relation, instead of transactional, you're relationship based.
Yeah.
So you're not just dealing in numbers and free appraisals and it's a relationship.
It has to be a more enjoyable way to do business, surely.
Oh, I can't wait to go to work. But when I first started, I got locked in a room, had to call 120 people.
Yeah, so that's like
you've got to grind. You've got to get your momentum, but once you've got it, holding it. And the next thing I think to relate to any, once you've got it, it's actually quite hard to keep it because you can rest on your laurels and become lazy. But also everyone says ego can creep in and you really have to, you know, keep in check, because the minute that you start doing really well, and it's so visible in real estate, people can see your signs, it's quite out there. So if you don't keep your feet on the ground and don't drink the bath water, otherwise you can go downhill very quickly. So keeping your feet on the ground and just doing what got you there and keeping it and just refining, tweaking, do that little bit better. But I think one of the biggest takeaways would be once you get momentum, work out what got you there, but don't get ahead of yourself, because otherwise it'll unravel just as fast.
So talk to me about then, you've kept the relationships, your client's ready to list, you're in the door, but they are price checking you and you've got two other agents in the area dropping their fees to get the listing. What are you guys doing in a listing presentation that is different to A and B agent down the road, particularly when, you know, if price is an issue or, you know, whatever it might be?
Big at the moment.
Huge.
Fee cutting, just because stock's so tight. One of the best things you can do is if you're their agent before they need you, and you've built in that trust by giving them info over 3, 4, 5 years that they're thinking about it, you don't have to fight so hard on the fee. But I think you just got to point out what's the difference. Is the fee 10% difference? Okay, look at the results. This is the process that will get you the best price rather than the promise on price. It's just really stripping it back, saying we're going to guide you through this process to get you the top dollar. And if you can demonstrate that to the client, why you're that 10%, 20% more, but they don't pay you anything until it's settled. So the cheapest agent is the one that pays you, you know, gets you the most on settlement date. I think the key is to outline that to the client on your process. And it's all process driven. The days of hoodwinking someone and talk on.
I'd probably be more nimble around the process. I think sometimes when you know what you know, it's not always going to suit someone. So just for example, if you're really believe in auction and they've had a horrible auction experience, you're not coming in and going, you've got to do this, not knowing that their situation. So basically I'm just going through all the scenarios. Do you want to go off market? Here's the pros and cons. Do you want to go on market? Not just being a bit more nimble around fees also. So there is extreme fees. And I've had a few clients that like we've had to come down in fee because I know the other agent. We're still more, but there's that pressure on fee. Where I've probably gone to the point now where I have enough confidence in my process and systems, I'm saying to them, I did this with Tom Panos the other day talking about it, Mr. Buyer, you tell me, or Mr. Seller, you tell me what you believe is an average outcome. And they might say 500, Shane. Everyone's saying 500. Okay. Well, if I only get you 500, it's only fair you pay the average fee. What was the average fee amongst these agents? 2.2%, 2.4. Okay. What do you think is an outstanding number? Oh, 550 would be great. Okay. So if I got you 550 and my fee would end up being an extra 3,000, would that be a worthwhile investment? Shane, if you get me 550, I'll pay you more. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's do it this way. This is fair fee. This is a good result. This is a great result. Let's base them on these outcomes. You can't lose. And you get the agent you want.
Yeah.
Which also is for your questions where before you get into the appointment, when you're when the call comes in, it's the questions that you're asking because you can say, well, have you sold before? How did it go? What was it? And then you can go into the appointment knowing not to go the auction route or the set date sale with no price. The questions that you ask when the call comes in really sets up the appointment if you haven't heard. So alluding to Shane, it's like if they've had a horrible experience with auctions, you know from that conversation you're not going down that route. So the questions that you ask as the agent when it comes in to set up the appraisal when you're in there to control the meeting to make sure it goes to plan.
Yeah.
We just had an interesting conversation about no price. Now, I personally, as a buyer, do not like no price.
Yes.
Right? So I said to the seller, what do you like, what don't you like? Shane, I hate when there's no price. I said, why do you hate it? I said, because I have to ring the agent to find out. I said, this is why I think it's the best option for your property.
Yeah.
I need to explain this change of zoning happening. I need to explain that you can do this with your property and I need to explain that. So whilst you don't like it as a buyer, do you think it'd be, rather than looking online, not knowing all the facts about your property, making decisions from the couch, because no one reads what I write, do you think it'd be in your best interest? And he said, yeah, you're right. And that's around conversion of a strata, these sorts of things. So you have to have a method to the madness. And I knew they didn't like that method. But once I explained why we need to do it, because they're not going to be really working out your price on apples for apples, they said, yeah, that would work well for us.
Yeah.
But if they didn't want to do it, okay, we've got to look at other options. But it's really important to know the different processes, know the outcome they're achieving.
Being that nimble.
And doing no price for a cookie cutter villa in Gosnells is madness because they'll just go to one with a price.
Yeah.
But certain properties, you should always have a good strategy and a reason behind why you're choosing that method, not because you just went to a Lee Woodward course and this is the new thing.
Yeah, and I had a question on pricing strategy, and I think we've talked about it before, but it's interesting you say that because I do think there's some agents or agencies that will just consistently use the same pricing strategy,
set
right?
Set date sale and
exactly. Yeah. But obviously that's not – for you guys,
you've got to be as Shane was saying, you've got to be nimble. Otherwise, there's not one size fits all because your villa, your development site, your house on the river, everything's different, and you've got to work out what the buyer type is to put the best campaign in place. So you can't be rigid, and that's part of a listing tool is working out what's the best way to get the phone ringing and get the right buyers through the door. So I get it all the time because a lot of agents in our area put no price. And I always go into the listing presentation and I say, have you been looking? How's the process going? Where are you looking? And they're like, oh, everything's got no price. We're sick of talking to agents. They just pester me and put me on the database and send me stuff that's not relevant. So I know that buyers are very frustrated that they have to ring the agent to get the price. And I know that's not – you've got to put yourself because a buyer will be a seller one day. If you – make it difficult now, in 5 years' time, they will remember that.
And I think when they do call, and this is really important too, a lot of agents I think are being lazy and probably scared to miss out on business by putting a price. I think you've got to give a guide. But what I explain to I do a bit of role play with my seller and you go, look, Shane, look, if I don't like no price, what happens? Okay, this is what happens when the call comes in. Mm. This is the dialogue used. Now, the amount of times I've had a frustrated buyer ring about price because they're frustrated there's no price,
mm.
by the time they get off the phone, they're so informed, they know the reason why, their tone changes drastically because mm-hmm. you're not just going, oh, we're in the 1-2. We'll just put it on for 1-2 then.
Yeah.
If you've got a guide, but when you explain those things, the buyer straight away, they start to build that rapport, negotiating is easier, and you're building that trust as opposed yep. to just writing back 1.2, 1.2, 1.2.
yeah.
Because you just go, why didn't you put it off to 1.2?
Realestate.com did a study in January, a survey for a year of no price. Mm. And they said you would think that's accurate, but 73 to 74% or less inquiry if you have no price. Yeah, yeah. But it did also another thing. It took away the trust of the agent
mm.
that they came across a little bit untrustworthy because mm. you're trying to not trick them, but you don't have transparency in the campaign. What are you telling one buyer compared to another? Yeah. So I think if you can make it really easy for a buyer and a seller, people then gravitate towards, okay, this agent makes it easy for us to mm. make a decision. We don't have to guess. We're not going to be tricked. We're not going to yeah. be used as leverage. If we want to buy, this is a price. It's backed up by sales evidence. I trust these guys. I'm going to make an offer and let's get on with it
mm-hmm.
versus snakes and ladders. What's the game? Set date sale.
Yeah.
You know, just make it easy.
Yeah. With the no price thing in the inquiry though, obviously with realestate.com, just a quick query on that. That's data coming from their site, right? So they don't know who's calling directly unless getting told from the agents.
When they change that model, they could work out the agent number reveal. So if you look at realestate.com,
you've got to press for the number.
You've got to press for the number. Yep. So
they're so sneaky, aren't they? Smart's the word. Sorry, realestate.com. sorry.
What else is, gaining momentum in a suburb? I think the main thing is, and if you look at Shane's business model, he built his business on one suburb and then extrapolated it out.
Yeah.
Then you add in the referrals and then you've got a very big pool. But for anyone listening, I always think start with one suburb, absolutely nail it, and then start the periphery suburb so that when a buyer's driving around on Saturday and your three suburbs are next to one another, all they're seeing is that same agent sign. So sticking to the areas, not chopping and changing and just stick to your knitting, but get really good in a few spots and dominate that market. Because anyone that's really good, that has traction, has stuck in an area, owned it, and then done a really good job over time.
Yeah. So tell me, Pete, how did you go about your core area was?
I originally started when I started selling and I was early 20s with Booragoon just because there wasn't a really, really good rep that I had to try and knock out. And then I got that suburb and then I went out from there slowly.
And then you've been kind of moving your niche over the last
few years. Properties. Same areas but better stock within there. So they were the harder ones to crack, and once you've cracked those, then you can try and hold that type of stock in that area versus, you know, your villas.
It's a real estate journey, but if you start and you deal with Pete and Booragoon, and like you said, a lot of people moving to different suburbs, if they started their real estate journey with Pete,
then they're the right moving up with him.
When they move to the next stage, it's only natural they're going to use him.
Yeah.
So where I see guys that might do some big numbers, and I used to do it back in the day, I was everywhere. The momentum stops the day you stop because you're not the trusted person. You've got one sign. You've got these little fires everywhere.
You're fractured.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think when I look at the relationships you have in those areas, the amount of referrals I get for something, say, North Beach, Karina, because you did the right thing then, and they go, you know what, he's just good at what he does. We had the trust and rapport. We've all got access to the data. But before you get that business, you've actually shown whatever happens here, I'm the right person for you.
Not letterbox dropping around your sale and carrying up and cold calling.
No.
You're putting your energy and your bandwidth into a certain market, which then yield results. Yeah. If you get extras on the peripheries, beautiful. Yeah. It's just a bit of cream. But your energy and time, everyone has a limited amount of time, is in one pot, which then creates momentum.
Beautiful. Anything more to add on that, guys?
I just think that the guys that are last in this market are the ones that are quality agents. The fee cutting, yes, there is a lot of fee cutting.
Yeah.
But it's not sustainable in the sense that when people go to you, they're not probably going to refer you because you did a great job.
Yes.
Typically.
Yeah.
You're going to be, if that's fee cutting, and that's the only way you're going to win business.
I think, well, yeah, if agents are fee cutting, it's because they can't justify their price in another way, right?
And there is pressure on fees. So we can be more competitive in this market.
You've got to be commercial.
Yeah, because we're going to sell it. But in a market where you know you're probably going to be there for the next 16 weeks, which was the case pre-COVID, some things were just sitting there. There's just no way commercially you can work it out to be a dollar a visit.
Yeah.
Which is
100%. But if you go back to pre-COVID, COVID and now, you're really a real – what you're going to stand out if you're a good practitioner because it's now – I mean, last year, how many times did you ring your vendors and get a price reduction? I don't think I did a price reduction call in a year. Now I'm doing them every day. I'm ringing two vendors and just – and I won't say chip away at them, but I'm just bringing – keeping their expectations in line with the feedback. And all these little one percenters now you've got to do to get – the job done. So to stand out now, you've got to be a really good practitioner across the discipline versus last year, everyone was a hero because the market was ahead of the vendor's expectations. Mm-hmm. Now there's a gap and you've got to close that gap. So to get momentum, you've got to not be the best lister or the best seller. It's the best at keeping your vendors in check with the price and closing that gap. And that's what people want, a good process versus these, oh, I'm the best, I can do this. It's very process driven, like the pre-COVID market, not as tight because stock's still really low, but I think it's such a different market to last year.
Yeah, this will be a much more, in my opinion, enjoyable year because the better agents will stand out because they're going to have those better conversations. The guys that were just listing it here and then eventually 70 days in a market where the average days was 16, they finally got there because the market reached there. I still don't believe that was the best price had they got the right process, but it looks like they eventually were right.
Yeah.
That won't happen, I don't think, this year.
Mm-hmm.
Another good thing to work out, and when you're doing the appraisal, I really take price out of the equation. We've got to give them the band, but we used to shoot ourselves in the foot as an agent just being too rigid on price. So we're now going in and just saying, look, let's remove the price. Yes, we've got to find the band, but let's work out the best strategy to get the most amount of people in the door through marketing and negotiation.
Yep.
The price will self-regulate, but let's get the band and let's get everyone in. And it's your decision, seller, if you stay or go. I'll present you the offers. I'm like your fisherman, but let's get that process to get them in the door and not lose the listing on price saying your house is worth X and I guarantee it. And it's the market's choice.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get that process right and don't lose the listing on being too fixed on a number because you're not buying it, the seller's not, they're selling it. Not up to us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think I've asked both of you this before, but probably in a very different market to this. What is your favorite part of the process? Do you like the deal? Do you like the negotiation? Do you like the listing and point? Like, what's your favorite part of your day?
Probably for me, as I mentioned before, it's being on the phone to people, communicating. Like, I don't, another sale, another listing, I don't really.
It doesn't mean much.
It doesn't mean much to me.
Yeah.
I don't know people that maybe don't do many deals go, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, shut up, Sean.
But I genuinely believe like having those great conversations, getting off the phone to go, okay, well, they've told me in 6 months' time they're probably going to be doing something. From now, let's make sure in 6 months' time they know every fact. They're so informed that forget about using me. It's going to be a great process for them.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to be surprised by anything.
Yeah.
That's probably my day I get most excited about. For me, it's a Thursday. Like Thursday, my best calls, I lock in and I've just got the right energy. You got me on a Wednesday, but Thursday.
Yeah, we were 15 minutes late this morning because we couldn't get Shane off the phone. Yeah. So that
but
answer doesn't
Thursday,
surprise me.
Thursday is a good day and I just have those really good chats. So that's my favorite day of the week.
Yeah,
and everything flows because it's easy and it's all in line and you're not having these stressful conversations. Yeah.
Mondays, vendor follow-ups, buyer follow-ups. Yeah, I guess a lot of messy work, but Thursday is just great conversations about what I do every day, trying to inform them, not looking for return. You do get the returns, but at no point it's like a boiler room, but you're just like, you know, Wolf of Wall Street, next.
Yeah.
deal,
Yeah.
Pete?
I've got a really good PA that helps me do what I do best and just be with people. So the best part for me, I think, is once it's settled and the seller's like, thank you for helping me, it just was so seamless, stress-free, and you got me from here to there.
Mm.
And that's what means a lot to me because, you know, after a while, the chase, it wears off and it's more process-driven, but the best satisfaction you get is when someone that was in a bind or generally had a bit of stress in life and it's settled one day, you know, you give them the gift and they're super happy and they're like, thank you for helping me through this challenge. And that's what means a lot to me. But that comes through a very well-oiled machine on process so that Because there's everything, something will always go wrong in a campaign. It's very rare that something, you know.
Highly stressful period too.
Highly. Yeah. And yeah. If you're their sounding board and you really care, like they can call you and you always answer and you're there to help and nothing's too much trouble within reason. Mm. And then at settlement day, they're super wrapped and they're happy. And then they'll then refer you to their friends. That's the most enjoyable thing to me when Betty's got a smile on her face and she's moving to Regency Gardens and she can't wait. I'm like, how good is this?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you very much, guys.
Nice. Thanks,
pleasure
Jess.
As always. Thanks for coming in, awesome. Pete.
Thanks for having me.
Chat to you soon.